This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the results, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hello, Claret, and welcome to another episode of the Known and Never podcast. I'm your host, Natalie Bromley, and my goodness, for only the fourth time this season, we have a podcast bringing you a win. I am joined for this week's analysis show by regular panellists Tom Whittaker and George Poole. We look at the return of crowd favourite Murat in goal, James Trafford getting dropped to the bench after calls for that for some time. It finally happened, and what a difference that made to the side. We look at Fofana, some misses and some goals. We look at some strange substitutions, and we consider what Forest's point deduction means for the mighty Clarets. Without further ado, let's go. Gentlemen, a win. What is this? What is this nonsense? We are celebrating a win. We've got George's Tash. We've got a smiling Tom. What more can our listeners possibly want for? How are you both?
Very good. Yeah, much better after Saturday. It's just, I've forgotten what it was like to win a game. I was out in town on Saturday night. I had a great time.
Yeah, definitely. George, there's not been many times this season that Clarets fans have had a little bit of fun and games and something to cheer about, but Saturday definitely brought that.
Yeah, there's not been many times they've heard my voice either. I think I've only been on about four times this season. It might be after every win, you know, at this
rate. Really has, and this has been noted. So effectively, George Poole is a John Terry of Known and Ever podcast listeners.
Yeah, I've brought up my full kit.
He's brought his full kit and his tash, and he only ever comes on the podcast when we're winning. And you know what? For the interest, our good buddy Rich Steele is on paternity leave at the moment, so our numbers are down. So we decided not to completely slam him for being a glory hunter and only coming on when we win. And we have allowed him on. But you can send him as much abuse as you want, listeners, because he deserves it.
Yeah, Tom, please do.
Yeah, let's kick off with you. The big talking point of this weekend's game was, of course, we've been teased that there were going to be some big surprises coming for the weekend. And the news, which did surprise us all, purely because we didn't think that Vincent Kompany was going to change his stubbornness on this one, was that James Trafford, for the first time this season, was dropped to the bench and Murat brought in to make his Premier League debut for the Clarets. Pretty strong performance from him, and Burnley started to look like, unsurprisingly, the side that we saw last season. How did you rate Murat? How did you rate the team's performance, particularly from the back, from the defender's perspective, with Murat at the helm?
Yeah, I think obviously we've won a game for the first time in about 3 months, so you've got to be happy with that first of all. I think it's quite difficult to judge how much of a difference it's going to have made because it's such a small sample size. You know, Brentford are down to 10 men after 5 minutes.
Sure.
They're not one of the better teams we'll play this season. You know, they're in really bad form themselves. But having said that, I think it was obvious that there were aspects of our play that definitely improved with Murat in goal, just moving the ball a lot quicker. It seemed to me like we were more comfortable being a bit further up pitch with him because he's got a much better range of passing. You know, you don't have to have... I thought Taylor, for example, was about 20 yards further up the pitch than he has been this season because you don't need someone to come and take it off Murat's toes, you know.
No.
Murat can pass out. You know, he found Taylor on the halfway line pretty much, I think, at one point in the second half. He's obviously way more comfortable being 20, 30 yards up the pitch than Trafford is. I took a photo in the second half. We got a free kick and that Muric took just inside their half. So all 22 players were in the Brentford half, and it was like, guys, I've missed
Hooray!
This. We just look a lot more dominant. And as I say, there's a big caveat that we played 10 men for over 90 minutes, you know, in total, and we didn't play a great side. And it'll be interesting to see what we look like. Well, I'm assuming that Muric is going to be in for the next game as well. It'll be interesting to see what we look like against Chelsea with a slightly tougher test, because he did have his flaws as well. There was the kind of mix-up with Shea. There was a potential just before the goal, there was a potential maybe penalty he could have given away. He was a bit erratic in there, a bit of a collision with Ivan Toney. But he made some brilliant saves as well. I think, you know, his passing is obviously his main attribute, and that's where he really is much better player than Trafford. But some of the saves he made, the one from Witter in the first half.
Oh my God, that was insane.
Yeah, and I think if we're honest with ourselves, I don't think Trafford's getting that. And if that goes in, you know, there's no blame attached to Trafford there. It's just good play from Brentford. Clever play. So it's not a criticism of Trafford, but I've said on here before this season that what you don't get from him is what we used to get with Pope, where you just make saves that you don't expect him to make. Yeah. And I wouldn't necessarily associate that with Muric, but he came up with that one. That was a big, big save right in half time. And then I think the one I mentioned, him nearly giving the penalty away on Toney, but there was a save just before. Ball comes back over, Toney hits it, snapshot first time, and it's a brilliant strong arm just to knock that one away as well.
Yeah.
No chance of the goal, but he did. I thought his all round performance was really good. You know, not just the passing and not just dictating the tempo, but some of the stuff that he did as a goalkeeper as well was really impressive. And it's just
definitely.
It makes it even more frustrating that we've had to wait so long for this change to be made. And as happy as I was, and you know, everyone in the ground was buzzing when they heard Muric playing, it's just crazy that it's taken so long, really.
Yeah, which brings me on to the point I'm going to bring you in on, George, and that's definitely where I am with this. I'm annoyed at company with this. And just hear me out on this. I think at this stage of the season, where it's going to be some escape for Burnley to get out of relegation, it looks pretty much like we're going to be in the Championship next season. To me now, at this stage of the season, Vincent Kompany needs to be deciding who his team are next season, who is going, who is staying. Out of those that are staying, who's going to be starters, who's going to be fringe players, and what position are they going to play in? And the one constant in all of that is his goalkeeper. Who is going to claim the number one jersey next season? Is he going to go back to Muric because he won the Championship last year? Or does he stick with his blind faith in James Trafford all season? So to change him now with just 10 games to go, to me, George, is odd. If he's saying that James Trafford is going to be number one and he's our number one keeper and he will get that number one jersey next year, which makes sense because a season in the Championship is exactly what James Trafford needs, then you've got to stay with James Trafford now, keep him going and just keep him learning and developing. But if what Vincent Kompany is now seeming to suggest is that he's got these two quality keepers, he thought Muric was excellent, and now Muric is in with a shot of the first team, then as Tom Riley says, that makes that decision to wait until 10 games of the season till we're effectively down to make that change almost negligent. Like, where are you with this? Am I just being too black and white with that?
Yeah, I mean, I'll obviously throw back to you after I've said my spiel, because I know you feel probably stronger on this, and you actually have a different opinion than I do. Because for me on this, like, stripping it back to, I think as Burnley fans, the expectation at the start of this season was we might get relegated, we might stay up. It doesn't particularly we win the league, come on. Dare I say it doesn't particularly matter either way. You know, in terms of a Burnley fan, we love being in the Championship. It's very enjoyable. You know, we've had some really good seasons there recently. And the most important thing for a lot of fans was, okay, but how will Kompany deal with this season? Is this long-term project to entrust the club with, you know, with Kompany as we have done? Is that the right decision? So I think the thing that's been most frustrating throughout the season isn't the results, isn't the fact that we've been losing 2-0 here, 2-1 there, whatever. It's been the fact that Kompany has shown this unwillingness to learn. And that's what's made me particularly question, well, you know, theoretically, if we went back down and then came straight back up with Kompany, how could you then look forward with excitement? Because this manager clearly doesn't learn. He's clearly not getting it. There's something he's not getting here. So for me, I actually took so much pleasure in seeing he's made this change, because it, does show he's willing to learn. And I know we're going to come on to it a bit later, but with the Anduni substitution and bringing him off and putting Brownhill on, I don't think that's something he'll have done earlier in the season. But again, he's showing that he's willing to learn. There is a change in company. So for me, like, yeah, there's a frustration course because you think, go back 6 months, if Muric had come in then, what ifs? But look, if, you know, my auntie had wheels, she'd be a bike. It's that kind of scenario. So for me, I'm just so happy to see he's finally made the change. And I do think it's really quite a glowing reference both for Muric and I suppose for company in that I think he was so tied to having Trafford as his number one. You know, he spent so much money on him. He's clearly, for me, going to be a fantastic keeper. So for the fact that he's brought Muric in is such a, I guess it's a glowing reference of Muric more than anything and how he's trained to stay within touching distance because, yeah, anyway, just to that's my point. And I'll throw back to you, Natalie. But one last thing I'd say, just to Tom's point on you don't expect maybe these saves from Muric. I'd argue we've maybe not seen him tested yet like that. It was his Premier League debut. In the Championship, he didn't have to make these
saves. That's true, yeah.
You know, maybe the ceiling on Muric is higher than we even anticipate.
Yeah, all really good points, George. And I guess the one thing I just don't think we see the right way is that Vincent Kompany should be given credit now with 10 games to go, that he was so married to James Trafford that, look, you know, he's finally been prepared to do it. Well, that's really bold when we're already down and there's 10 games to go. Like, why not do that at Christmas? To me, two things were wrong, and I don't know how you feel about this, Tom. James Trafford should never have been given the shirt to start the season with anyway. He came in and went from League One to the Premier League at, 19 years of age, however old he is. That's a massive jump with no experience. Muric did nothing wrong to lose that shirt in the first place. He just won the title in the very successful Championship team with his teammates last season. It should have been his shirt to lose. Muric has to start against City and he has to be given some things. If Vincent Kompany doesn't think he's good enough, well, listen, it's a manager's call to say, if Vincent Kompany said at the beginning of the season and went, Muric is not strong enough for the Premier League, I don't believe he's technically good enough. There's also a couple of documented disciplinary issues with Muric that still might be playing on company's mind. He might think, you know what? I don't have faith in you. I'm going to bring somebody else in. That's a manager's prerogative to make that call. And we've got to give him the autonomy and the freedom to make those decisions as our coach. It was a blatantly obvious 5 games into the season that James Trafford was not strong enough for this league. So at that point, he has to say, okay, irrespective of what's going on with Muric, I at least have to try him in the same 5 games, see what he can do, and then assess them both. He didn't. He blindly let James Trafford go for the entire end of the season, ruining his confidence and getting the fans back up and putting us in a position where we were shipping 4 or 5 goals per game. So I don't give him that credit for doing it now. I think he's bowed to fan pressure. I think he's realised that there is a fractured relationship between him and his crowd, and he's done it because A, he's got nothing to lose now if we're going down, and B, he's starting to build some bridges with his fans, which, you know what, is absolutely fine and I had no problem with that. But from a footballing perspective, I think that's wrong. Where are you with that, Tom?
Yeah, I could talk for a long time about this. It's a really difficult situation that we're in now. I think I agree with you totally when you say that a few games in, it was really obvious that it should be Muric playing and not Trafford. And I would have been really interested, you know, they asked Kompany after the game about, you know, starting Muric, and he said, oh, well, I've got 2 good keepers to pick from. It was a bit of a cop answer.
It was a cop answer.
I'd really love to know what the honest reason why he was playing Trafford for so long. And I'd really love to know the honest reason why he decided to make the change at this point. Because, you know, I think if you ask probably 99% of Burnley fans, they would have all made that change a few months ago. I think it was obvious. And he must know, you know, he's not stupid. He's got much more of a, you know, football background than any of us. So he must know that Muric is the better option right now. So the only thing that I can really, that only makes any sense to me is the transfer fee that we've paid for Trafford. That's the only way I can really explain what's gone on. I agree with you when you say Muric should have started. I think only because it's obvious that he's a better goalie at this stage. Now, I think the reason Trafford started was because of the amount of money we spent on him.
Yeah.
I think when you're a club of our size, it's is probably a record transfer. He's up there as a record transfer. You can't be spending that amount of money on players who are not ready to play.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah. And that's a justifiable reason to play him.
Yeah, and that I think that's a fair reason to maybe give him the first few games and see how he gets on. But as you said, it should have been acknowledged that he wasn't ready. Maybe send him out on loan to the Championship or something in January and just give him a few games there, because the longer it's gone on, as you said, destroying his confidence. You know, he's just digging a bigger and bigger hole for him. The fans are getting on his back, and I don't think the fans are getting at Trafford personally. I think they're getting at the decision that we can all see is wrong to keep playing. I think that's why you're getting the booing and the frustration. I think most people would say he's not an awful keeper, Trafford. He's obviously got flaws in his game. He's not as good as Muric, which is the biggest problem. But
he's talent there. Yeah,
absolutely. But we're in a really, really difficult position now. Because what, like you said earlier, what do we do next season now if we're in the Championship? Because you can't play Trafford based on the potential that he's got, because you know we need to go straight back up. The longer we leave it, you know, the longer we have seasons where we're playing kids who aren't ready, and
keepers mature with age. Keepers are not in their prime in their early 20s, like outfield players are. Look at the stages that Heaton and Pope came to us, even Joe Hart to an extent. They're in their late 20s, early 30s. That's when keepers mature. They are physically stronger, they are mentally stronger, and they've got the experience. Everybody but Vincent Kompany could see that this was an awful decision to completely throw James Trafford to the lions with this.
Yeah, and the physicality is such a big thing as well, isn't
it? And like, the whole side has been physically weaker than most Premier League sides this season. It's a problem we've got. We've bought players that are boys, and they are not physically developed enough, and they're not strong enough in any of the areas that we've got there. And James Trafford's just, he doesn't command his box because he looks tiny. He looks tiny in that. And it's just giving every single side who plays against us an edge. Sorry, George, you wanted to jump in with something?
Yeah, just you reminded me just then. You know, sometimes during a day, you just randomly remember what you've been dreaming about the night before. And you were mentioning there about the physicality. I dreamt last night that I'd opened a Match of the Day magazine, and it was Burnley's new signing. And this guy was absolutely shredded. He was built like a brick, you know what house. And it was like, finally, we've added some physicality to the side. I've just remembered that's what I was dreaming about last night. Okay. But what I'm going to throw
George,
back to you,
on behalf of all of our fan base, thank you so much for sharing that with us. That was prime podcasting. I'm sure they really appreciate it. Anyway, what was the actual point you were going
to
make?
What I'm going to throw back to you, Natalie, is you're saying Vince Kompany's making the wrong footballing decision here, because you know it's about next season, about who's number one. I'll throw it back to you that he's actually making a better footballing decision than you're thinking about right now, because he believes this team can stay up. You're writing us off. You're saying it's all about next season, but Kompany, as manager, is deciding that he's actually going to put his pride to one side and say, actually, for the betterment of the team in these final 8, 9, 10 games, Muric is the better option, and I'm going to suck it up and admit that. So I'm going to put that to you that he's actually been quite good in that scenario.
He didn't suck it up and admit it, by the way. He very much fudged his answer. And he's
not going to admit that, though, because he can't throw Trafford under the bus.
Yeah, he's not. He's not going to admit this. I'm not giving him that credit that he's let his pride go to one side and he's sucking up to do it for the next team. That is a really good point, actually. And I think you're right. I think that as a fan, I've just been so disappointed with this season, and I've just had just the joy and the hope battered out of me every single week. It's been really hard to maintain that optimism and that belief that we can stay up. But you're right. Sure, we'll come on to it in a minute. Forest's points deduction wasn't as many as we hoped, probably not enough to see us to survive. But there is some hope there. There's still points deductions to come from Everton, and they've got a really horrendous run coming up to the end of the season as well. Maybe you're right. Maybe Kompany has had advanced knowledge of this. Maybe the league have been told before the fans about this deduction.
I don't necessarily think that, but I think we maybe underestimate how much belief there is in the actual Burnley squad itself. I think they're quite sheltered from how we're sort of feeling, or that doesn't impact them too much, because I just think with every interview that I hear from, especially from the senior players, the likes of Josh Cullen, or I think Charlie Taylor's interview was very good after the game. against Brentford, and I think they have quite strong belief that this will come good. I still think they're very much buying into company and into everything he's trying to do. I think we underestimate how much they believe. And you know, that belief might not come to fruition at all in the summer.
No, I think it's a good point. I admire the optimism, and it's a fair point.
Charlie Taylor's interview is quite good to listen to.
I love Charlie Taylor.
Yeah,
I've got so much respect for that man this season. After I've said this on previous podcasts, after dropping to second choice last season, nobody came in to buy him when we got relegated, and with all of his teammates went. To be told that we were going to sign this season the player that ousted him last season, that fell through, and we were told then at the beginning of the season we were going to rectify that in January, and that man still played at left back all season and put in a shift every single season for the team, knowing full well he wasn't full choice. What an unbelievable pro and what an incredible asset he is, and I will always respect him for what he's done this season, always.
Yeah. Just before we go to Tom, I was just going to suggest that Tom's point from earlier was very good about Charlie Taylor playing a lot higher up the pitch and the whole defence playing a lot more comfortably higher up, because obviously Rich is not here right now to bang his drum of the high line's not doing us any good. But you know what, I think, yeah, like Tom suggested earlier, I think because of that confidence they've got in Muric, the team was so much more comfortable playing like that, and Taylor was a standout from that.
Yeah, especially Vitinho's some kind of midfield wizard now. I'm not really sure what's happened there. Tom, sorry, you wanted to jump in.
Yeah, it was just I don't know where I'm going with this really, but I was going to mention Charlie Taylor's interview as well. I'm just going to leave it dangling there. But I got the impression from Charlie Taylor's interview and just from the body language and stuff on Saturday as well, that the players look a lot more confident with Muric. They look a lot happier that Muric is playing and not. And Taylor was very, he made a point of saying that they were very happy Muric was in. And then not that I'm not happy with Trafford playing, but I really did get it.
Yeah. Oops, sorry, Gaffer.
Yeah, I think, and it does make you wonder I wonder if that kind of played a part in company's decision. But like George said,
so maybe you think player pressure maybe has got to him as well?
I don't know. That's why I said I'm just going to leave that dangling there, because I haven't really got an opinion on it, but it's just something that, because obviously I don't know, but it's just something that occurred to me. And when George was talking about confidence, then it did spring to mind as well. I wonder if that's part of it now. I wonder if there's a bit of a feeling. It did have very much the feeling of that game when Tom Heaton came in for Joe Hart, didn't
it?
That feeling around the ground. I remember for that game, I was chatting to Barry Kilby randomly before the game, and he was saying, well, there's going to be a surprise at 2 o'clock. You're going to like it on the team sheet. And it was, yeah, it was all a very similar kind of feeling. And obviously we got the win. Yeah, whether we go on the same kind of run in the next few games, it might be a bit different this time. But
So frustrating. Yeah, I'm just really annoyed. The one thing I would say, we have to be critical of James Trafford's play. We're in an analysis show. We sit and we talk about games, good and bad. So there's no way of getting around the fact that there's been some poor performances from Trafford this season. Some of the goals have been absolutely not his fault at all. His defence that is sitting in front of him or Muric are absolutely appalling. But that's a conversation for another day. The thing I don't like is that the chants, so the calls for Muric when Trafford was still in the nets against Arsenal, was it? Maybe, I can't remember who it was, maybe the game after that. The constant chants and the massive cheering from when Muric's name was on the and then the chants for him. Trafford's on the bench. This is a guy that we've been calling to be replaced because of the impact of his confidence that Kompany's done all season. He's now been dropped and the fans are happy about it. The crowd's been lifted and the fans are chanting his competitor's name. He's a 19-year-old guy. He's a 19-year-old lad. Not his fault. Let's just be a little kinder to him. That's my only thing with Saturday. I was a bit like, oh, it didn't make me feel comfortable. It didn't. So go ahead, Tom.
I just thought it was worth saying with that. Like I said earlier, I do think it's not so much personal for Trafford. And I think the majority of people don't think he's like an awful goalie. I think the problem is that he's being asked to do something that he clearly can't do. He's not ready to do it.
Everybody blames company. Everybody blames company. Yeah, of course they do. So. But it's just when you're James Trafford, if they are as sheltered from this as George thinks they may be, how's Trafford? That's the only thing that he's got to go on. He doesn't know that everybody's blaming his manager. He might just sit there and think everybody thinks I'm terrible.
Yeah, no, I hope that kind of someone close to him or whatever kind of manages to sit him down.
Because he is an asset, and I have got one eye on James Trafford being our future number one and being a real talent if we keep him that long, because I think he's a cracking goalkeeper. We've just thrown him in from League One to the Premier League without any development, and it's just been, and his manager has the responsibility for that decision.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Let's move on. Another slightly unpopular player at the moment who was dropped, brought on, and then dropped again, Zeki Amdouni. I thought this was a strange substitution, taking JBL off, who I thought had a fantastic first half. Very surprised to see him taken off the pitch. And brought on Zeki Amdouni in his place. Crowd didn't like that. It was a bit, this guy's not done. Immediately gets himself booked and then gets hooked off again for Brownhill, if I remember rightly, Brownhill. The explanation from the manager was that he was concerned that he would get a second yellow card and we would be down to 10 men. He might have done that, but Zeki Amdouni is not particularly well known for being an Ashley Barnes style fasty player who's prone to a load of yellow cards, and I don't think he was necessary. You know, you don't hook every player off who's been booked. You just don't. And if that's the case, was it not somebody else who got booked who didn't get taken off? So I don't believe that. I just think at the moment Zeki Amdouni is in a funny one. So he's a quandary, George, I think. Like, what, there's talent there, is an exciting player, is a luxury player, and is one that we're not utilising. How do we solve the problem of Zeki Amdouni right now?
Yeah, he's frustrating to watch sometimes, isn't it? Because he's got so much, you could tell he's got so much talent, but it just doesn't seem to click. But I don't know, I hasten to add, that means he's quick to add, but I'm actually hesitant to say anything too negative about him, because it's like, it's been what, 7 months since he signed? Like,
yeah,
it's a throwback, you know, it's 20 years to the early 2000s. If a team signs a player and he doesn't work straight away, he'll probably get 2 seasons to make it work. Whereas now we want things to work straight away every time. I think with this substitution, it was just one of them where company realised he'd messed up by bringing him on. It was a very weird substitution. Like, we didn't need that attacking player to come on. We could have done with a bit more calm in Brownhill. And I think, maybe, to be fair, I'm not entirely sure when Amdouni was brought on, because my soda stream stopped working at that point, so I couldn't refill my drink. So whether he came on when we were 2-0 up.
What? You didn't know when we made the substitution because the soda stream wasn't working and I couldn't fill my drink?
Think about it. I wasn't on turf on Saturday and it was a 3 p.m. kickoff. So I wasn't entirely sure when Amdouni got brought on. If it was at 2-0 and then obviously we've conceded and it's gone 2-1, it's understandable to then go a bit more defensive, because we've only got that one goal to defend. So again, to my point, I think it's quite a positive thing for company in that he wasn't afraid to change things and admit that he got that substitution wrong and bring Brownhill on. So I think with the Amdouni one, it's just a case of,
so he's say one luxury, that, George.
He's one luxury player too many that we've got. No, because he can't throw Amdouni under the bus. I don't know.
But he isn't doing, because that's a tactical thing. It's not a player performance. He can come out and say, I got my tactics wrong with that substitution. I thought we needed an attacking player. We didn't. We needed a holding one. So unfortunately, I had to bring him back off again and bring Brownhill. I made a mistake. Do you not think so, Tom?
Yeah. Yeah, and I think his transparency is an issue a lot of the time with fans.
I mean.
Even going to stuff, you know, like not saying anything about injuries, you know.
Yeah.
For fear of it giving information to other teams.
Tom keeps throwing his hand up, George. Sorry, I'm going to bring him in. It's about four times he's raised his hand. I'm like, there's some major passive aggression going on here with Tom's hand raising.
I just wanted to make the point. So, I've been quite critical of Company a lot this season, but I thought actually it was he got the sub right twice. So at the time when Amdouni came on, we're 2-0 up and we're cruising, and at that time it didn't feel like Brentford were anywhere near going to score. It was only when they brought Mbeumo on the last 10 minutes that they suddenly looked a different team. But I thought it made sense to bring him on 2-0 up in a comfortable game for a guy who's a bit low on confidence,
just to try and see what he could do. Yeah, I get that.
Yeah, so I thought fair enough, good. You know, a good time to bring him on. And then obviously when they pull one back, suddenly they look a different team, suddenly we're under threat. And he's been criticised a lot for being reactive, making the wrong subs, you know, bringing Mike Trezor on against Luton when we're trying to hold on to a 1-0 lead. Crazy decision. But, you know, Amdouni, I was calling him the invisible man. If we haven't got the ball, you're playing with 10. And you're playing with 9, really, when you've got Odegaard as well, because they just don't do any work. And it's not the game to have Amdouni on when you're hanging on. You know, we had 9 minutes stoppage time. You can't be having a guy who's off. whether you can make the argument that he needs coaching, he needs to be sort of made to do a bit more work is a different argument. But, excuse me, sorry. I think when the game's in that stage, he's completely useless. So it makes sense to sub him. And as I say, the way the game was when he came on, it made sense to bring him on. The way the game was when he hooked him, that made sense to me as well.
There you go.
Noted
in the ship's log, we have found a positive. Well done, Vincent Company. We're actually going to give you credit for that one. You made good substitutions at the time they made them. Okay. Fofana. Tom, let's stay with you for a while. Two absolute howlers. The one where he went round the keeper and somehow fell over his own leg. I was just like, oh God. Oh God. And there was another one as well that he missed, which I think, did he clip it on the back of his heel maybe and it didn't go in? But superb second goal. So what do we make of him? A lot of people liken him to be the new Nathan Teller. It's shown pockets of brilliance for me, but then also shown pockets of Amdouni style invisibility and just chasing shadows a bit. I'm not really sure what to make of him.
I think he's less Amdouni. I think he does try and get involved, but sometimes he just looks like he's never seen a football before. I think I said last week he was all arms and legs at West Ham, but then he was suddenly thwack one in the top corner from 25 yards, and it was similar.
Yeah.
Saturday, misses an open goal from 3 yards out. I think it takes some skill to do that, because I think that was much, much harder to miss than it was to score. I have no idea what he did there. If he did that again 1,000 times, he'd put it in the back of the net every time. It was just one of them. And then obviously, like you say, the one, I think he's a bit unlucky there. He's quite clever. He waits behind the keeper, he nicks the ball, and then he just slips. You know, it can happen. I think probably what he should have done when he slipped is just seen Odegaard on the other side and just hooked it across, and Odegaard would have attacked. But he obviously didn't see him. But yeah, those bits of play were quite farcical. But then, as you say, he's also got the sublime as well. I thought the finish was brilliant for the goal. It was so nonchalant, they just flicked it into the corner. It's just so satisfying. You just see it rolling into the corner and you know they can't do anything about it. So I think you saw both sides of him there. Sometimes he looks terrible, sometimes he looks fantastic. He's very raw, and you'd like to think that the more he plays and the more he develops, the fantastic bits will happen more often and the terrible bits less often. But I think just the way he's played this season, I think we're probably not going to get the chance to see that in the Championship next season.
No, that's a shame. Tom, at the other end of both the pitch and the scale, Dara O'Shea, true to form, threw in his regular as clockwork couple of suicidal passes to his keeper again. A player that hugely frustrates me, I've got to say.
Sorry.
Are you there, George? No, it's George. It's George. Are you there, George?
Sorry, I thought you'd call Tom to the floor, so no, I was letting Tom take that one.
Did I call you, John? No, it was you. I was bringing you in. If I didn't, I apologise. Yeah, Dara O'Shea.
Yeah, I think Dora O'Shea is like one of like the my lesser gripes of this season. I think our defense is pretty weak. Excuse me, in general. But I think O'Shea is one of them where you can personally like let him off a bit because you know he's gonna give you his all. He's one of them a solid character, as like the overlap would say, he's a good lad. You know what I'm saying? So I think sometimes I let him off with his mistakes and because there are mistakes, but it goes back to this perennial question: should we have signed him in the summer, or should we have signed Taylor Howard-Bellis? And it's easy at first to say we should have signed Howard-Bellis, but then you think, well, no other Premier League club signed Howard-Bellis, and why is that? Is it because he's not quite that level? And a similar argument could be made for O'Shea. You know, why is no one else taking a chance on him from West Brom before? Are these two defenders guys who can look really good in a Championship, but a bit like your strikers, you know, your Callum Wilsons in the past, the people who can't make that jump? All these two defenders in that same category for a defence. So, yeah, he throws in the odd mistake, but he's a good lad, so I let him off.
I think my counter-argument to that is that if that is the case and there's no difference between the two of them, what Taylor Harwood-Bellis would have done is continued that reconnection from last season to this one. He's already got that rapport with the fans, is a fan favourite. We lost too many of last season's Championship winning sides, and we've had that, I talk about it a lot, that disconnect between fans and players. We've got a whole new group of players who we don't necessarily recognise or have built up any sort of relationship with. So I think if that is the case and they are identical, then you go with Taylor Howard-Bellis on that basis.
Yeah, I think that's definitely a valid argument, and I think we've all felt that sort of disconnect, and it's certainly been one of the biggest issues of the season. The fact that, you know, it's all right going down if we've kept that same team from last year, you know, as much as we could do. There was exceptions who we couldn't sign. But, you know, when you sign a completely new team and cast away your terrace heroes, it's not a good combination. And that is why Muric's got such a big reaction at the weekend. We all know Muric is not the perfect goalkeeper. And we all know, you know, there will be mistakes there. But he's made that connection. And that's why that went down so well.
So that brings us on to what we think this team can now achieve. And we touched on this earlier on in the episode. Is Vincent Kompany blindly trying to get us to the end of the season until we're mathematically down with some vain hopes that we can stay up? The news today has broken that Forest have been given a points deduction. Not as many as we were expecting or would have liked. It's just 4 points dropped, puts them on 21 points and in the relegation zone, does give Luton a boost. George, it makes it better than it was, but is that enough for us to have a realistic chance to try and catch these, particularly with Everton as well, expecting to have some points deductions as well?
Yeah, I was also in that camp disappointed earlier on today when it wasn't 10 points or whatnot taken away from Nottingham Forest. But Luke Stansfield on Twitter made a good point to me. He said, you know, it doesn't necessarily matter how many Forest get taken off them, because even if it's four like it is now, Luton are 17th, and it's Luton we care about. It's that 17th place. So it doesn't particularly matter if Forest had four or six or seven, because we would still have to finish above whoever's in 17. So I did think that was quite a good point from Luke. And it's just one of them. I don't think we can be entitled, can we? You know, if we stay up and two teams have had points taken off them, then fair enough. But if we go down, then we can't really ask for anything more, because we clearly weren't good enough to stay up. But I think it just about, with our win at the weekend, it just about gives us a shout. Instead of being 8 points off safety, we're now five. And I think personally, 5 points to Luton sounds a lot better than 8 points to Forest, or even 5 points to Forest, just because
Luton have a horrible run in as well.
Yeah, I think Luton have got a horrible run in. I think there is a limit to how far that momentum from their feel-good story, the way they got promoted, there's a limit to how far that can take you. And we saw that with Owen Coyle, you know. I think we'd have all stayed up if Coyle had stayed, but towards that Christmas period, we had dipped a bit, and that momentum can only take you so far. And I do think Luton will run out of gas. It's one of them. I think we're in the mix, and I think it's very much down to how we perform and how we play. And I know it's not a very good answer, but that is the case. You know, if we come back after the international break and put in a performance against Chelsea and we've still got that momentum in our team to be performing better, then we've got a healthy fixture list. But we've all sort of accepted relegation for so many months now that I don't give myself any hope. But I will admit that there is definitely hope.
Is there hope, Tom? I think we are. George talks about momentum and talks about Luton's momentum dipping. That's something we've not had all season. We haven't had any momentum. We've not had any games, any results back to back. We've followed up every single point with a loss. Is now the time to get that momentum? Can we do it? Or is this, you know, are you trying not to get excited?
Well, as you say, obviously winning on Saturday following a point at West Ham, so that is actually the first time we've put
two. Oh, of course, yes. Sorry, yes, you're right.
I feel a lot more optimistic than I did a couple of weeks ago. I feel slightly more optimistic. I think, you know, we're talking about 5-4 points. It's not an insurmountable gap, especially when you consider we have still got Forest to play as well on the last day of the season. But we're going to have to be better than we have been. Now, it's whether you think that that's going to happen. I think probably we've got more chance of it now that he's playing Cullen. We look a better team, I think, with him in the midfield.
Yeah.
And now obviously that he's playing Muric, and I think we'd all pretty much given up hope that that was ever going to happen. But, you know, I think we looked a better team against Brentford. There's big caveats, as I say, it's a very small sample size. We're playing 10 men for most of the game. And, you know, let's be honest, we still look pretty shaky and we still struggle to get it over the line in a game that we dominated for 70 minutes. So we have clearly still got flaws in the team. We're clearly still going to concede goals, I think, in the running. But, yeah, as George said, you know, 5 points to Luton doesn't feel insurmountable. I can't see Luton staying up, to be honest.
I think it's likely to be the three of us, or it might be. You think Forest might catch, like, just make up those up?
Forest look a poor side at the minute.
They do, to be fair. Yeah. And they couldn't beat Luton. They couldn't. They really struggled against them. Poor sides there.
Yeah, and Brentford look poor. Everton look poor. I don't think Everton have won yet this calendar year either. And there's a possibility they'll get some more points deducted as well.
You think that's only going to be two, though, don't they? You think it's only going to be two?
Yeah, but it could be significant come the end of the season. I think I think we're maybe 8 points behind them now, so six puts you within two wins. The bottom line is we're going to have to win probably, four or five games, of probably really realistically. Is that going to happen?
Nope.
Well, the fixtures aren't that bad, are they, by and large, but we're going to have to pull a big win out from somewhere. You know, Brighton at home is winnable, difficult but winnable.
Yeah.
At home, similar. Forest at home last game, winnable. Sheffield United away, that's winnable. But we're going to have to get a big win somewhere. You know, we're going to have to win at Chelsea probably, or win at Spurs, or win at Man United. It's a tall order still.
United and Chelsea are winnable if we have our day.
Yeah, that's
we
right.
We scrap
that's
an ugly
right.
win from him. But we've got, Vincent Kompany's got to be prepared to do the ugly, gritty stuff if we're going to get one of those wins. The wins, that the surprise bonus wins, are the ones where people have been stubborn and they've not let them get into their floor. We've not done that to anybody this season. And as Tom, sorry, as George just rallied, do you know what? Maybe I did call you George. I think your name's the wrong way around all podcast. George just put in the chat box, he's right. Our crap goal difference is an extra point deficit for us. It's really bad, like, to be that far behind in goals.
Yeah, that's true as well. So I think if we weren't Burnley fans and we were looking at it objectively, we'd say, well, you know, they won four of the first 29. They're not going to win five of the last nine or whatever. But we are Burnley fans, and, you know, I'd be lying, and I've been convinced we're going to go down for ages. I mentioned this earlier in our group chat. A friend of mine is getting married on the last day of the season, 19th of May. And when I got the invite, I thought, well, I very much doubt we're going to be still alive on that game, so it's fine. I'll go to the wedding. And now I'm thinking, what if somehow, you know, Muric turns us into Brazil 1970, we start blowing teams away, and we just need to beat Forest on the last day to stay up, and I'm not there, you know. But I think we'll know more in the next few weeks because, as I say, Brentford is a very small sample size. Beating 10 men Brentford at home is not an incredible. It's not the kind of achievement that makes you think we've massively turned a corner. But if we go to Chelsea and get something, and then we beat Wolves, I think it's fair to say as well that Palace and Arsenal were the nadir for this kind of second half of the season. And we played okay against Bournemouth. I think it was perhaps a bit over-egged out where we played. I don't think we were great. We've done enough to get a point at West Ham. We had a good first half showing there, and we've done enough to get a win over the line. So it's fair to say the performances are improving. The team selections are improving. I just think it might be a bit too late, but I'm definitely a lot more optimistic than I was, you know, the 1:59 on Saturday before they announced the team.
Yeah. George?
Yeah, I think there's definitely room for optimism. Just going off Tom's point there, I think the second half against West Ham and the shakiness of the Brentford win in the end can be put down a lot to these players are human. They know what's on the line here. It is nervous. And I think once you start getting some momentum, like we possibly have got behind us now, those shaky moments become fewer because you back yourself more. I really do think that West Ham first half performance was a sign that this team's clicking now. And now with Muric back, the points we've raised tonight with the fact that we feel so much more comfortable playing an extra 20, 30 yards up the pitch. It's not just how comfortable we feel playing like that, but how we actually play, the way he can pass out from the back, the way we were controlling that game against Brentford. And yeah, it was 10 men, but you know, it's the cliche. It's sometimes harder to play against 10 men. And Brentford had probably one thing in mind then, which was just to scrape a draw. So they were more compact and it does alter the game. So I certainly think we've turned a corner. I think we've definitely put in better performances since Christmas. It's just one of them, isn't it? I think we're going to give it a go and see where we get to. But a bit like this time 2 years ago, I'll certainly be having a few extra viewings of The Great Escape between now and the end of the season because it'll get me well in the mood.
Excellent. Okay, let's wrap this up then with a little bit of fun. Quick fire answers to both of you. There's some predictions till the end of the season. Tom, who goes down?
At the minute, I'd say Sheffield United, Burnley and Luton, unfortunately.
George?
Sheffield United, Burnley and Luton, just because when you say we've won four games all season and we're going to have to win five, yeah, and two of those games are against Luton and Sheffield United, and you think, oh my goody aunt.
I'm going to say Sheffield United, Burnley, Forest. That's what I'm going to go for. Tom, who wins the league?
I'd say boring but true.
George?
Manchester City, because they are phenomenal.
I'm going to go Arsenal. Last one, George. Who gets fourth? Who gets a Champions League spot?
I couldn't care. I don't know about this position. I don't know who's there. I'm going to say Aston Villa. I don't know. I do not care.
Tom, thanks for your input, George.
it sounds like the English team is going to get a fifth Champions League place anyway this year.
So yeah. It's a bit like that, isn't it? It's a bit.
Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised because I think Villa and Liverpool will have good runs in Europe. For me, I think Villa will just pick Tottenham to fourth, but I think they'll probably both end up in the Champions League anyway.
Yeah, on the assumption that it's only fourth place, I'm also going to pick Villa. Good. There we go. Happy days. Let's finish on a high. That is all we have time for, listeners. It's been nice to discuss a win. It's been nice to discuss the potential momentum that we've suddenly now pulled from somewhere and turn Burnley into 1970s Brazil and get ourselves the Great Escape. What do you think? Do you think Burnley can survive this league? We would love to hear from you. You can drop us a message on any of our social media channels, or you can email us at podcast@noneandever.net. We'll be back on Friday for the preview show, looking ahead to that Chelsea game. Oh, is that this weekend? No, we've got a break. We'll be back a week on Friday. Looking forward to that Chelsea game in the preview show with Dave Statman Roberts. We're all going to have a weekend off this weekend. It's my birthday, so I'm going to enjoy some time apart, and I'm going to give this lot a week off, and hopefully by then we'll have dragged Rich back from paternity leave and we'll get him on as well. Godspeed to any of you that are going down to that Chelsea game. We do hope that you have another result to look forward to. In the meantime, we will bring you all the stats and the facts ahead of that game. My thanks to George and Tom for joining me this week, just to producer Matt for knitting this together, and for all of our listeners for downloading and listening. Your support is very much appreciated. We would not be here without you. I've been Natalie Bromley. This has been the None and Ever podcast. Until next time. The None and Ever podcast is brought to you in association with the TalkSport Fan Network. Our host and editor is Natalie Bromley, and the show is produced by Matt Moss.
Our resident statistician is Dave Roberts, and our FPL expert is Adam Dennett. The Analysis Show team is collectively Tom Whittaker, Rich Steele, George Poole, Charlotte Rigby, and Adam Dennett. Our music is provided by George Gaskell, and our newsletter team is headed up by Jamie Smith. If you don't already, you can subscribe to our newsletter by visiting nonenever.substack.com. Thanks as ever go to our partners TalkSport. We are proud to be associated with the TalkSport Fan Network.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.